Our first guest tonight is Jillian Locke. We can call her Jill. And I'm excited to have her join us. Who is she? Well, Gustavus Adolphus College, professor of political science and gender, women, and sexuality studies. Jill is available to talk about Roe versus Wade, her commentary on the role of shame and how it's weaponized or ignored in politics has been featured in the Washington Post. When she first moved to Minnesota 2 decades ago, she volunteered as an escort for patients at Planned Parenthood in St. Paul. Considering this background, she really brings a unique balance of academic political expertise and lived experience to her analysis, and she is joining us now. Jill, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Ms. Steele, and happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day to you, I hope. My goodness. First of all, just mentioning Planned Parenthood, reading that, I have wept because of what is going on right now. I don't understand why so many, especially men, want to be in our bodies. They want to control who we are and what we are. And that's a real problem for me. Let me start with that alone. When it all happened, you know, Roe versus Wade, women got together and we were fighting and we wanted this madness to stop of controlling us. How desperately should we work with our hands, our mind, our money, all of it? How much should we work to make sure this does not happen? That they don't, although they say that it's already done, I don't believe that. I think it can be changed. Tell me how you feel about it.
You know, I think we have to work extremely hard to protect the right to choose an abortion. And I think that I don't know if I'm quite as optimistic as you, to be honest, this looking down the pike. If this decision does come out aligned with what we see in that draft, I'm quite fearful for what that means for the right to abortion and our broader privacy rights regarding everything from how we kind of contraception that we choose to who we can marry. So I am really deeply worried, and even more as each day passes, I think, since the initial leak.
You know, I have a daughter and I have granddaughters, and I look at them in their eyes and I go, what will their world be like? It seems like this hunting that they are trying to begin and continue is just shocking. It's absolutely shocking. I keep saying to myself, Gerilyn, you should be standing on the top of a building and screaming, holding not just a board that says we have to stop this, but finding another way to get back at them on this. I mean, I'm angry now about it all. Are you?
I'm furious. And I share that view that there's almost a paralysis. Where do you begin? And for me, one of the things that I was doing was, you know, preparing, kind of going over my notes and really thinking about this. That's how I spent most of my Mother's Day, was actually reading and thinking about abortion rights and preparing to talk to you and your listeners. I'm furious, and I think I have the same sense of dread probably that a lot of us who've been watching this for a long time have, in that they told us what they were going to do and they're doing it. So as the saying goes, when people tell you, you know, show you who they are, believe them. And I've been fearing this my entire adult life, and I don't mean to catastrophize. I'm usually a kind of find my way through. But I think it's the time to speak about it in kind of timid terms is probably past.
So tell me what you're hearing. You know, I have a long-standing relationship with Gustavus. I just love them. And knowing that you are teaching at that school, a course called Sex, Power, and Politics at Gustavus, and that's since 2004, I believe. What are you hearing from the female students at Gustavus?
Well, you know, the funny thing is I'm actually on sabbatical this year.
Oh, you are.
I am. So I am not in front of the classroom right at this minute, but I am getting email after email from former students writing to me to say, let's talk. Can we please chat? How do we make sense of this? Because one of the things that we abortion is really a central issue in that sex, power, and politics class. And we talk about sort of reproductive justice and reproductive freedom more broadly. But I make a really intentional point of saying the A word, of talking about abortion access in the context of the fight for women's rights and the fight for civil rights. Because I think too often we speak in euphemism and we don't really name this right. And now all of a sudden, or maybe not all of a sudden, but now we're really wondering what will become of that. Mm-hmm. So some of the things that, yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, but I'm guessing, because there have, of course, been previous gestures toward restrictions in the 20 years I've been teaching at Gustavus. And I think there is an immediate sense of fear about what this means for young people's safety and their ability to plan their future, their ability to access safe, legal, and affordable contraception and abortion care. So I think that, and there's an active group of students at Gustavus. I'm thrilled to hear that you have a relationship to the college of students who do work to organize around issues of reproductive rights there. And I know those conversations that they're having are probably pretty sober and somber right now.
I think for me, the challenge is that, you know, I have women and girls in my life that are really important to me. And my mm-hmm. fear is that how we have fought in the past is not going to work today. We are a totally different country. We have learned all of the holes that are in our Constitution. We have found out things that we did not clearly understand when Trump got in office. And so now, you know, we can walk. Remember the Million Woman Walk?
Right.
Yeah, you know, that whole movement was great, but then it disappeared so quickly because our attention is captured. It's like it's stolen by the television or by films, you name it. You know, we only listen and watch for a while and then we let it go and move on to something else. So how do we talk to the girls today? If you were to stand in front of a class right now, knowing what is happening with Roe versus Wade, knowing that they are coming for our girls, they are coming for our sisters, knowing this, how in the world would you advise them to fight? Because the fight before was totally different.
Right. I think you're right. The fight is different because the war against Roe has been, you know, 50 years in the make, 49, 50 years in the making, and it has been a multi-front war. It has been waged at the state level, at the town level, at the medical level. It's been obviously waged in the courts, and it has been waged through this sort of tacking back and forth between of kind of full front assault on Roe and the constitutional right to abortion. And then also these sort of minor battles when the anti-abortion movement realized Roe was probably going to be settled law for a while when it was upheld with restrictions in 89 and 92. They said, that's fine. You know, that's fine. We'll let it be the law of the land. And I remember watching some interviews in the early 90s with some of the anti-abortion activists saying, it's actually in our interest to leave Roe as settled law, because then people will think abortion rights are safe. But the court has opened the door for these restrictions in these 89 and 92 cases. And so now what we're going to do is we're just going to eviscerate access at the state level with waiting periods, with parental notifications, with having to watch videos, having to give specious false information, and then, you know, making it an elective, difficult to access for medical students who would want to learn about learn the procedure. And then let's not forget the violence. Right. I mean, we've watched the Dr. Slepian, Dr. Tiller get murdered, the access at, you know, the bombings of the clinics. And I certainly saw when I was escorting the harassment on the front lines. So what they've, and then this plan to stack the court. So in some sense, it's a bad news, and Trump delivered his three anti-Roe justices, and they're doing exactly what they were put there to do. So, that's the bad news. It has been this multifaceted war on reproductive rights. I suppose the good news is the sort of bloom where you're planted. One of the things that's disturbed me is that Protestant clergy played a really powerful role in the fight for abortion rights, safe, legal, and accessible abortion rights, because they saw the people dying of botched abortions. They saw people drowning in parenting more children than they were capable of parenting. And so that was seen actually as a religious freedom issue. Right now, we're hearing a number of pro-choice Jewish activists talking about how, the Jewish right to an abortion is sacred. Those kinds of reproductive rights have religious freedom standing. The Protestant clergy are really still very quiet on this. So if you're involved in a religious community, I think that's a place that you can get involved. Another thing, doctors have also really, there's been a real dereliction of duty, I think, there. Other than those doctors that are on the front lines performing abortions, most doctors are pro-choice, but they've kind of chosen not to dirty their hands with this. And so it has become a kind of isolated and stigmatized and obviously highly dangerous aspect. But if it could be embedded aspect of medical care, but if it's embedded in a broader breadth of hospitals, doctors, clinics across the lines, right, from cancer care to pediatrics, all standing shoulder to shoulder to protect abortion rights, I think that is something to do. I think the Democratic Party needs to say the word abortion more. I think there's been this this real refusal to say people are pro-abortion when, abortion saves lives. So it's okay to be pro-abortion. So the right has sort of put abortion politics into everything. I suppose the best thing we can do with that is realize it's everywhere. And so wherever we're planted, we are actually positioned to push back. And the majority of Americans support abortion. They support abortion access. One out of four, one out of five, their varying estimates of women have an abortion in their life. All of us know people who have had abortions and whose lives have been improved by that access. And it's not enough to have something horrible happen and then expect the people who've had abortions to tell, as you see now, their most vulnerable, devastating stories in order to be seen. I think people across the board need to use their positions of influence and not leave it to women to tell their most private stories right now in this time of crisis.
All right. If you're just joining us right now, we have with us Jillian Locke of Gustavus Adolphus College. She's a professor of political science and gender, women and sexuality studies. And we are pleased to have her join us. If you don't mind, can you stick with us, Jill?
Absolutely.
All right. We have her joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 7:51 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. And we are talking about something very serious with Professor Jillian Locke. And she's a professor at Gustavus Adolphus College of Political Science and Gender, Women, and Sexuality Studies. Welcome back, Jill.
Thank you so much.
As we wrap up this conversation, I have to ask this question. I don't understand why the fight for abortion is as loud and successful as it is, because the children, they literally, after the woman has the child, they walk away. Those that are against abortion walk away from these children. They may see about them for a few months, but after a very short amount of time, that's it. They don't make sure there's food. They don't make sure that these families have homes. They don't make sure of anything. They literally want you to have the child and just go out and do whatever you have to do. We have 9,000 children homeless on the streets of Minnesota every night. Mm-hmm. Yet they are telling us to, don't abort, don't abort. And I don't understand that. How do you look at the children and do nothing or so little that it can't make a dent, but you want to tell us what to do with our bodies? You want to tell us how to make that happen. It's ridiculous. So where do we go from here?
Yeah, I think that, right, the contradictions are just glaring. As former director of Planned Parenthood, Sarah Stace, used to say, you know, the easiest baby to care for is the one that's growing in somebody else's body, right? And, you know, once you have a baby out in the world, it requires a lot of care. And the same people, as you say, the same people who are the loudest in the anti-abortion chorus are the stingiest and cruelest when it comes to caring for born children, for born people, and supporting the mothers and parents and grandparents and communities who are raising and educating them. I mean, you only have to look at our maternal mortality rate to see that if we really wanted to start with care for children, we wouldn't, first of all, separate it from care for people carrying those children, right? We would also invest in and double down on support for prenatal and postpartum care, for early childhood education. And I don't quite understand how the anti-abortion agenda, which is so single issue, is detached completely from all of these other issues of life, right? And livelihood. I mean, we can even be Jeffersonian about it, you know, the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How people don't call that bluff a bit harder and really ask those hard questions. They've somehow seized a moral high ground. And we've been debating this. I remember in college in the 80s having this question about how can abortion rights claim the moral high ground when anti-abortion so compellingly seem to be convincing everyone that this is the moral position. Well, part of it was when we leaned into the language of choice, that doesn't quite have that same moral high ground, but people do prioritize choice in the U.S. that has a kind of moral standing. So I don't, again, have the answer, but I think in those moments, I think we do need to ask those questions. When people are, you know, going on and on about the sanctity of life, I think we can rightly demand, what is your card look like? What is your life scorecard? What are the things that you're really working on, right? And how are we putting people in a position to care for the children that they already have, or care for the children, care to be able to bring their pregnancies to term and to care for those children? Poverty shouldn't be the reason that someone seeks an abortion. But we do have people who don't have access, don't have access to basic housing. Those are no conditions to bring someone to bring another life into this world.
And they have the audacity to make sure that nothing will happen to someone who raped the woman, or incest, where a family member took them over and had sex with them. There's nothing, if I'm not mistaken, am I right about that? They're doing nothing about that. You cannot have an abortion, period.
Not for in this draft, right. There's no protection for rape or incest. And theoretically, the mother's health could still, that could still be a trigger for some protection, or the woman's life, not health, life. But that's also, that's insincere, even for people who say that they support it, in the case of the woman's life. That is completely insincere, because first of all, it's too late. You know, there are a lot of high profile, by the time you realize that a pregnant person is going to die because their preeclampsia, for example, is so great, or they have cancer and they can't both carry their pregnancy to term and get the chemotherapy and the therapy that they need. There's a million reasons why women's lives are at risk while they're pregnant. So, you know, it's a very demanding condition, right? Pregnancy is very dangerous.
It is.
And by the time that happens, where you realize someone's going to die, that's not even going to trigger, that's not going to trigger protection.
That's for sure. And Jillian, I wish we had more time. We could do an hour of this. Thank you for joining us tonight, and we will be calling on you again for sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Take care. Have a good evening.
You too. Okay.